As players brave the elements of Australia's oceans, the Fox Footy team is firing up this week's footy news agenda in the podcast bunker. This is the Monday Review.
Well, you couldn't have asked for a better start to the 2016 finals series. Unpredictable results, great football, and plenty of storylines to come out of the first week. We'll look ahead to the semi-final fixture, the questions that one raised, as well as five burning questions ahead of week two, four about the games, and of course, a little bit of player movement chat at the end of the podcast. This is the Monday Review in the Fox Footy podcast bunker, looking back at finals week one. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth, two very esteemed panellists in the bunker to talk about the weekend that has just gone. Firstly, the most charismatic TV sports reporter in the business, Julian De Stoop. Hello, Jules.
Morning, boys. Yeah, great weekend of finals footy, wasn't it? And the Hawks lost, so it was good. No, I know, I love, I admire the Hawks, but... Yes. And it was just another fantastic game. It's unbelievable. We'll never see another rivalry like this. Well, there's so many close games.
That's right, no doubt. And we'll talk about sort of where it ranks among those games since 2008. But I suppose one person out of all of us in the bunker probably was the most heartbroken that the Hawks didn't win on the weekend. Of course, the number one second team supporter of Hawthorn, the business.
the only one.
Yes, in Riley Beveridge, foxfooty.com.au journo. Hello, Riles.
G'day, boys. Yeah, it's great to be here. I think I was the only one riding that Isaac Smith kick home on the weekend. Love the Hawks, disappointed they lost, but yeah, great weekend of footy, great to be back.
Let's have a look firstly at our best on grounds from the weekend. There were plenty to choose from, no doubt. Who was your best on ground, Jules?
Well, I think if this man was playing for a higher profile Victorian club, he'd get a lot more credit than he gets, and that is Luke Dalhouse.
Absolutely
agree.
Who
was sensational for the Bulldogs. I think it was Michael Turner who coached both him and Gary Ablett at the Falcons a few years ago. So there's a lot of similarities, and Dalhouse will start as a forward and he'll move into the midfield and become an elite midfielder, and I think he's done that. He's probably leading, interested to see their best and fairest this year. He's probably leading until he got that knee injury. Yep. And he, alongside the man of the moment, Caleb Daniel, were sensational on Thursday night.
Numbers-wise, he's right up there in terms of the elite midfielders in the competition. You're right. How he's been able to turn that form around, you know, improve his tank just like Gaz did, and move into a more permanent midfield spot is fantastic. What about you, Riles?
Mine's someone who's been quite maligned at stages this season, but it's Tom Hawkins. I feel that on Friday night, he showed the value of having a key forward in a final side. He only kicked two goals, but he proved that stats weren't everything. His impact around the ground was really pivotal at crucial stages. He laid a big tackle on James Frawley, which changed the momentum of the game in the third term. He finished with two goals, and I thought he was one of Geelong's best on a great win.
He probably was. Probably fair to say that James Frawley might not have been amongst Hawthorn's best, I think, on Friday night. I don't know if he's anyone's worst on ground, but didn't have his best game, did the Chipster. What about your worst on ground, Jules?
It's North Melbourne, and it's not for the fact they lost. It's not the fact that the margin they lost, but for 2 weeks during that bye, they spoke about pressure. We're going to bring pressure. They had 43 tackles on the night. Yeah. Goldstein, Zeebel, Cunnington had 17 between them. So that means the other 19 players have had 29. And I'm not sure how many inside 50s Adelaide had, but it was a lot.
68.
But four of their starting six defenders, North Melbourne. No, there was Tarrant, McMillan, Attlee, and one other, I can't remember off the top of my head, Fredo, didn't lay a tackle. So, talked a big game, but didn't deliver. And just sums up their second half of the year, really.
That inside 50 count, 68 to 40. That'd be one of the biggest inside 50 diffs for the year. 68's a lot to concede, and 40's, you're basically on the path to losing any time you play a game. Riles, your worst on ground?
Well, I know we're going to touch on this a bit later in more depth, but it's Stevie J this week. Didn't have the best afternoon overall, but I think he really let his team down with that bump on Josh Kelly. He put his preliminary final spot in doubt. We'll probably get a week, I reckon two down to one at the MRP. And I think it was really costly from a player that everyone said they were sort of looking to on a day where he was meant to be the experienced player. He was meant to be the one that was drive them from the front. And that sort of needless bump that left someone really concussed. And at the end of the day, he's going to miss a preliminary final because of it.
Well, let's get into that right now. It's a burning question from the Swans and the Giants game. We'll get to the Giants' magnificent performance in the end. But Jules, as AFL 360 Chief Tribunal Correspondent, how do you think the Stevie J will play out this afternoon?
It seems pretty simple to me. As Riley said, it's a two down to one. And some people are saying it was off the ball. It wasn't off the ball. No. It was at a stoppage and the ball was in the vicinity. So I think it'll be careless. It has to be more than low impact because even though, look, people say, oh, he came back on the ground and played
he
out.
He wasn't right.
Look, they have a look at him in the following 2 minutes.
This is Josh Kennedy we're talking about.
Exactly.
As well.
Tough man, was clearly dazed. So it has to be more than low. It's not high because he didn't get knocked out or injury. So medium impact and obviously had high contact. So two down to one, misses a prelim, available for the grand final. So I can't see them coming up with anything different than that. And if he did get off, Or the conspiracy theorists would be getting very excited.
Given there's so much emphasis on how important he proved to the young Giants side during the week, how costly would it be if he's not there in a preliminary final?
I think it's massive. I know he didn't have his best game on the weekend, but I thought physically he was right in the face of the Swans. It sort of summed up their attitude. And if he kicked straight, he would have been one of the better players on the ground. And just as an on-field leader, he's been exceptional. So it is. Say they're playing the Hawks, I think he'd be fantastic out there for that young group. So, yeah, it is costly, and I agree with Riley. It was a stupid thing to do, and it's something, unfortunately, Steve's done before.
Just on this, is it time the AFL looked at an NFL-style independent doctors when it comes to concussions? Because I don't think anyone thought that in the immediate aftermath, Josh Kendi should have been back on the field, and there he was 10 minutes later after he was concussed.
It's a good question. Jake Nye was asked that yesterday on AFL Today, and he said, look, as a matter of course, the AFL investigates all concussions, but he thinks this one might further that push, I guess, for independent dockers. I think it's a good point. It is. And in a final, there's so much at stake. There's so much pressure on doctors and coaches want their players back out there. I think it would be better if it's taken out of their hands.
I think that there'll be a big push, and certainly plenty of discussion about that pending the tribunal result, well, the MRP result, I should say, for Stevie J on Monday afternoon. Just quickly on what we're talking about, potential incidents that the MRP might look at. Has Shane Mumford got anything to worry about with that sling tackle on the
weekend? I don't think so. I mean, Tibbetts got the broken jaw, but from a different incident earlier in the game. Look, I think he lets him go at the end of the tackle. And look, Shane Mumford's a big man. He's tackling a big man. You have to do it aggressively. But I think he lets him go and doesn't actually drive him into the ground or really sling him in. So I think he'll be fine.
It's in the one motion as well. I think he's fine there.
Just on Tippett as well. So you mentioned that fractured cheekbone. He won't play against the Adelaide Crows this weekend, and Callum Mills won't. He obviously suffered a grade one hamstring injury. So both of those players won't be out there this weekend. And you could see the emotion in Mills, particularly after such a magnificent week individually. And then for his finals campaign, well, potentially to end right there and then would have been a big, big blow. So with Tippett out, he's obviously had his injury troubles in the second half of the season, Jules. That's a big blow for the Swans.
It was a terrible weekend for the Swans because obviously we know how good Mills has been. And obviously coming up against Sam Jacobs this week, that is a big loss to have Tippett out. So, yeah, it was a disaster, really, for the Swans.
Well, let's just have a look at the semi-finals fixture as well. The Swans take on Adelaide at the SCG on Saturday night. It's a 7:25 p.m. game. But then before that, on the Friday night, the Hawks take on the Western Bulldogs at the MCG, 7:50 p.m. That is two fantastic matchups, but particularly that Friday night game with, I think, two teams coming off two very indifferent post-match emotion and results. That's going to be a fantastic contest. But I suppose when the fixture was released, a lot of people were looking ahead to the preliminary final fixture, and that's sort of where a little bit of conjectures come along, because as the highest qualifier from the qualifying finals, Geelong will host a Friday night game at the MCG against either Sydney or Adelaide, which means that the Swans or the Crows only have a six-day break. How did you read this one, Jules? Should either the Swans or the Crows, do you think, feel a little bit shortchanged, whoever wins that game?
Potentially a little bit, but that's the way they do it. The highest placed winner from the first week always gets the Friday prelim final the following week. So I can understand why they have done it. I think the bigger issue is the ground.
Yeah.
And why this game is being played at Spotless.
The Giants home final. So obviously the Giants will now play the winner of the Hawthorn and the Bulldogs game at Spotless Stadium. Robbo pretty big in the Herald Sun in the tackle early this morning. Riles comparing that the Spotless Stadium capacity is 24,000 and a redeveloping Simmons Stadium's capacity is 27,000. So Geelong could probably feel a little bit shortchanged as well. Do you sort of feel it's almost a little farcical that this game will be at Spotless Stadium?
I don't really buy into it too much. I think if you're playing a game, if you're putting the fans first and you're playing a game at Spotless Stadium, you might be pricing out maybe 5,000 fans that can't go because it might be sold out, given it's a Giants home game. If you're playing a game at Simmons Stadium, as opposed to the MCG, you're probably pricing out about 60,000 fans that can't go. So I don't buy into it too much. I mean, what are you losing by playing it at Spotless as opposed to ANZ Stadium?
I think it'd be the SCG if it was anywhere. But I just don't like keeping people out for finals. I think it's bad luck.
But how many fans do you think are going to be?
Well, it depends who it is. I mean, if it's Hawthorn, big fan base, how many would go up there? 5,000?
Maybe.
I just think we have a rule on this. If your ground doesn't have more than 40,000, bad luck. You don't host finals. Unfortunately, that's the way it is. And the Dogs could say the same thing. They didn't get one at Etihad last year. They had to play theirs at the MCG. That would have been the case again this year. So it's just all over the shop. So I think we need to just to say it one way or the other. Okay, Geelong, you can host every final down there or you don't host any. One way or the other. Because if Geelong played the Giants this year,
yep,
they would have hosted it in Geelong, wouldn't they?
Oh, it would have been pretty close. I would actually probably would have thought so. The only problem is that there's a big gaping hole at Simmons Stadium at the moment. So speaking of the Cats, a magnificent game on Friday night, Jules, against the Hawks. The burning question out of this game for the podcast is, where does this game rank among the best Geelong Hawthorn games since the 2008 grand final? And Maxie Lawton sort of did a nice little profile top 10 since 2008, and there's some ripping games in there. Where does it rank for you, Jules?
It's not the best. I don't think in terms of standard it was the best game, but the pressure was great. It was close or not. The two that I think were better that stand out for me were 2012 when Tom Hawkins kicked the goal after the start. I think Geelong got about 8 goals up that night. Hawks got back.
It's a high scoring game.
And probably
too.
The 2013 prelim was a better game than the one on the weekend when Sean Burgoyne basically won the game for the Hawks. But being there, you were just on the edge of your seat all night. And it's just a typical Geelong Hawthorn game. One team gets out 2-3 goals. The other team comes back, gets 2 or 3 goals in front. You think they've got the momentum. And then it swings back again. And really, obviously, either side could have won it. But as a Geelong fan, what happened in the last 40 seconds? They were all over the shop.
It reminded me exactly of the same play that happened when Hawthorn and the Dogs met in round 3. When
it was an
absolute flop of a torpedo punt from the defensive goal straight down the middle, a mark in front of the Hawks, and they just moved it forward straight through the corridor. I was blown away by the similarities between the two. It's been lost because obviously Isaac Smith missed that shot, but it was very, very eerily similar roles in that sense. In all honesty, did you think that Isaac Smith was going to kick that goal lining up?
Yeah, I did. Simply because would have been the most Hawthorn thing to happen.
Yeah, correct.
And it would have been reminiscent of their entire season, the fact they've won about 14 games by under a kick. Like, he looked confident as well. He gave a little wry smile to the umpire when he was telling him not to go off his line. But it was a tied kick. I felt he leant back on it a bit. It looked good off the boot, but then it drifted, obviously, late. I think what's gone a bit unnoticed is the fact that there were so many defining moments in the game. And I think had he gone back and kicked it, we would have all been praising Luke Bruce, because I don't think when that kick was smothered by Corey Enright, his ability to sort of keep his composure and find a target inside 50. And I know most of the talking points have gone back onto Isaac Smith missing the shot on goal, but you look at something like a Luke Hodge giving away that needless 50-metre penalty for back-chatting at the umpire, and then all of a sudden to put Joel Selwood to the top of the square. Had he not done that, might not have resulted in a goal, and Hawthorn might have won. So there were so many moments like that that could have changed the game. Similar with Stephen Motlop as well. I don't know why he was having a shot for goal.
What's he meant to do? He can't walk it over the line now.
I think he keeps it there, and either you rush it over and take your chances by rushing it over and waiting for pressure and rushing it over the boundary, or you lock it up and just try and win a ball up. I think you've got to do something. You've got to play the percentages.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think people have been a bit tough on Motlop on that one. I mean, you can't walk. That's the good thing about the rule now. Like, in the old days, you would just walk that over. But now the player has to sort of sum that up.
Well, just on Motlop as well, he has copped a lot of criticism throughout the year, particularly after his first sort of 8 games where he absolutely started and looked like he was going to take the competition to shreds. But on Friday night, he was one of the Geelong players in that final quarter that really drove the Cats over the line. The Cats are actually the best quarter four team in the competition by quite a margin this year. They've now won 20 of their 23 fourth quarters. And they were led, once again, Dangerfield and Selwood had 19 touches between them in that fourth quarter. But Motlop had 8 touches in that final quarter, where Cowan, Menegola, two sort of fringe players throughout the year, had 7 disposals. Guthrie obviously had a great second half after playing on Cyril in the first half. And Bartell lifted in that final quarter as well to have 7 disposals. So that fourth quarter shouldn't be underestimated. Yes, exactly the same score, 2 goals 4 to 2 goals 4. But that final quarter was just electric from the Cats.
I think it was too, because I felt like for most of the game, probably after quarter time, Hawthorn were going to win. I just felt they had a little bit more control. But yeah, Menegola is a good player, isn't he? He was excellent.
I don't like comparing to Robert Harvey, but as the game gets on, his tank comes through.
Robert Harvey.
I don't like comparing it, but he gets better as the game goes on, does young Sam.
Yes, Brent Stanton-like, of course. And Jimmy Bartell, we underestimated his role the other night. I mean, it's a good job. And look, I agree with Rob. I think Jimmy's just about done. But I thought it was a strange time to write that article.
Strange.
When he's had a specific role from the coach, and he's done it pretty well.
All right, Gibson only had 16, 17 touches for the night, and there was absolutely, he really had no influence on the game, really. He wasn't allowed to drop back and be that third man up, which he's been able to do so well, Ryle. So I thought Jimmy was actually quite important in that sense.
Yeah, and the other player who I thought was really good, and you touched on him before, was Cam Guthrie.
Yeah, he was good.
He started on Cyril, went to the midfield in the second half, and just absolutely tore it up. I thought he changed the game. And the type of game that it was, given that it was so much pressure around the ball and you needed contested ball winners, that's where the likes of Menegola and Cam Cowan and Guthrie really came to the fore. And you're going to have, I mean, Dangerfield and Selwood, you're going to have them. But the fact that they had that second tier that could come in and provide support, I think that's what proved crucial for the Cats in the end.
Ruggles for Henderson? Will that be the change?
I think so. Ruggles is clearly the most vulnerable defender down there at the moment. I think Chris Scott knows it as well, from what I understand. So I think that would be the logical move. And all might depend, I suppose, on who they play as well, you know, particularly if they play Adelaide, who have a lot of key forwards to look after there. I think Henderson would be very handy to come back in. Just on the Hawks, can they do it again? Can they win after losing a qualifying final and go through, Riles?
Yeah, you know my thoughts on this. I definitely do think they can do it again. I mean, they did it last year. They had to go the long way after losing to West Coast in week one. They had to play an interstate prelim. They've beaten Sydney and Sydney this year already, so we know that they can go up to New South Wales and get a result. It'll be up against a young Giants side if they do play there as well, which they can use their experience to call upon and help them out there. I do think we write them off. We tend to write them off a bit too soon, and we've done that in the past, and we've done it again all throughout this year. For me, they're still arguably the best side in the competition. I no doubt think they can still win it.
I think it's tougher this year. I mean, I think the Bulldogs this week is a tougher second-round opponent than the Crows last year
The
MCG. And I think if they get through that, the Giants is tougher than Fremantle in Perth. Fremantle's form is dropping away. Mm. The Giants destroyed Hawthorn up there this year, and I think their run would be too much for Hawthorn. They'd have to hope the Giants get a bit of stage fright and they rough them up a bit. And I think that's unlikely. So I think it's going to be really hard this time.
Just back to the Swans-Giants game. The Giants had no stage fright whatsoever on Saturday afternoon. They were absolutely outstanding. It was a brutal game. It almost outdid the previous night's game in terms of intensity. But a massive effort by GWS in the end, Jules, to get that victory. And it was quite unbelievable. Sort of 10 minutes after the game, you have to think to yourself, this team is actually one win away from a grand final. They were conceding 137 points per game almost only 3 years ago. Now they're on the verge of a grand final.
Yeah, it is amazing from that point of view. And yeah, they just beat Sydney at their own game. They were tough.
They did.
And then their run came to the fore. And probably the Swans' younger players were the ones that struggled. And pretty much the Giants didn't have many bad players. And he probably hasn't had a great year, but when they needed him most, Jeremy Cameron was sensational.
Gave Dane Rampey an absolute bath, an All-Australian defender. I reckon it's probably Rampey's only bad game for the season, and gave him a bath with a third term, third quarter that was just absolutely fantastic, Riles, in the end. And Jules mentioned it then, they were tougher at the stoppages, the two best stoppage teams in the competition. But what the Giants did is they also found another way to win. They actually outscored the Swans by 40 points from turnovers. So both those teams like to score from clearances. But for the Giants to find another way to win in a big game situation was a great effort.
Yeah, and what I love about them is Jules touched on before, if Hawthorn were going to bank on beating the Giants, they'd have to rough them up. I think Sydney tried to do that in the first 10 minutes, and they didn't get overawed by it at all. I mean, in the end, they almost kept their heads more than the Swans. We saw Heath Shaw was revving everyone up and giving up and about around him as well, and I think that proved crucial in the end. Cameron's third term was insane, as he said. He kicked four goals in about 10 minutes, it felt like, and really just turned the game on its head. So, yeah, look, they look a daunting prospect, and I don't think we give them enough credit for the fact that, as you said, they were conceding 137 points per game 3 years ago. I mean, everyone talks about how great the Western Bulldogs' rise has been, but this is a side that was worse than the Dogs 3 years ago and are now playing footy that's just as good, that's even better than them. So, look, they're a real premiership chance now, which is incredible to think, and I think if they do, then the AFL must sit back and think, what if we created here.
Yeah, great. That'd be fantastic. They're a great side to watch. They are fantastic. The interesting thing on the weekend too was Buddy Franklin. You know, there's been a bit of talk this year they're too reliant on Buddy Franklin. He played up the ground and I thought he played a pretty good game, to be honest, but there wasn't much else inside 50 when he's not there.
My question was, when the tide started turning against them, why didn't John Longmire just put him one out in the 50 inside 50? I mean, he was moving up the ground so much, but he just wasn't having he played well, don't get me wrong, but he wasn't having an impact. And the place where he could have influenced the game most was inside 50, and I don't think GWS had a defender that could have gone with him one-on-one inside 50, but they just never tried it, and it was surprising for me.
They'll change it this week, don't they? SCG will play closer to goal.
Oh, he does his best work at the SCG, Buddy. I think from 60 metres out, it's a bit different 60 metres out at the SCG compared to 60 metres out at the ANZ Stadium. So, yeah, it does feel like 45 metres. You're right, Riles. Absolutely. Just, I loved Alir Alir's game on the weekend.
He was good.
This is a kid who's only played 11 games. He comes in and looks like he's been playing for 111 games.
Yeah, he was outstanding. Yeah, he was one of the young Swans that certainly didn't...
Was he their best defender?
...get overawed. Yeah, I think he was on the day. Yeah, he has been a real surprise back at this year. So, well done.
You mentioned Luke Dalhouse just beforehand for your best on ground, Jules, and we have to rewind our minds all the way back to Thursday night, because it's that game has almost been lost sort of in the aftermath of the Monday morning office chat. I suppose the burning question from this is that one of the Western Bulldogs' greatest ever finals victories? We've seen them, you know, in recent years, sort of the late 2000s, produce some great wins there and just fall short in some preliminary finals, most notably against St Kilda. But that Western Bulldogs effort with lots of players out, their toughness was just so admirable, Jules.
I think it has to be one of their best finals win. Well, firstly, they'd never won a final interstate. Yep. They'd been belted by West Coast over there in recent times. I think probably it's their best performance since round one in terms of attack and defence.
I mean,
they're
one,
the knock's been their scoring, and that's as a result of some poor entries a lot of the time. They got that spot on, and then they defended beautifully. So it was just a complete performance by the Dogs, and the Eagles had no answers.
I was impressed with how brave they were, particularly with the footy from
half
back.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I agree.
They took risks. Their line breakers that ran forward of centre were just incredible in the way they burnt off. They tried to kick over the web, which was a very risky strategy, because if it doesn't pay off, then you tend to be kicking long into the web, which is what Adam Simpson wants you to do. But they went over the top of it. They got a lot of goals running back to goal. And yeah, brave footy, high risk, high reward, and Luke Beveridge paid off for him.
The Dogs haven't played like that for most of the year.
No, that's right.
It was almost a game plan change for finals, and it worked. So, you know, full credit to Luke Beveridge, who continues to put his hand up again for another Coach of the Year gong, despite all the injuries and the hardships that the Dogs have had this year. Caleb Daniel had social media in an absolute frenzy on Thursday night. His game was unbelievable. 33 disposals, two goals, five goal assists. Only a couple other players have had five goal assists so far this year. So he brought his teammates into the game, and an unbelievable performance, Jules.
He's just such a clean footballer. There was that passage of play in the third term where Lysett turned it over, and he just had to grab it in the middle, and he's one touch, little sidestep, handball, and they kicked the goal. His cleanness and his vision was outstanding. And I think, do we forget sometimes he's only a second-year player? Because he plays such a mature brand of footy. And, he was sensational. And I think he was the best player on the ground.
Everyone goes on about his decision-making, and it's fantastic. It's arguably his best decision-maker in the comp, but it's his ability to execute as well.
Yeah, correct.
You can have all the decision-making abilities in the world, but if you can't execute, it's no good. The fact that he can hit targets, he's probably the best short kick in the game at the moment as well. He can hit 15, 20-metre kicks that really gets the Bulldogs out of trouble. That's what really impresses me about him.
So Lin Jong was the only sour point, I think, for the Dogs on Thursday night. With that broken collarbone, Luke Beveridge almost jokingly said after the game, "I hope the tears were about his injury, not because he thinks it's his last game for the Bulldogs." He won't play again for this final series. So I suppose a two-part question. One, has he played his last game for the Bulldogs? And two, who do you think, Riles, might be an appropriate player to come in? Because the Footscray also, their VFL side, also won on the weekend, beat the Mighty Bombers, unfortunately, Jules. So Footscray will now also play this weekend. And they withdrew three players, I think, from their game against Essendon just come, which were Rourke Smith, Lucas Webb, and Toby McLean. So maybe one of those three comes in.
I'd like to see Nathan Rovat.
I was surprised they didn't pull Rovat or Kobe Stevens.
I was surprised he got dropped in the first place because I thought he was probably, of those five, was probably playing the best footy for the Dogs. So I was surprised he got dropped in the first place. He was great again yesterday in the VFL. So I'd expect him to be the number one man to come in for
Lee five-day break?
That's the question, though, like whether or not they can afford to do it. But yeah, if it is one of them three, you'd think it's Lucas Webb. I've been impressed with him as well. But yeah, I'm surprised that he didn't get pulled, Rovat, because I thought he was the most unlucky to get dropped in the first place.
Two big winners from Thursday night, I reckon, Jules. The Dogs, obviously, and probably the round 23 bye in that sense, because the Eagles certainly wouldn't have, I reckon, the kind of team we might have mentioned on this podcast.
We did. We said it wasn't good timing for them.
For the Eagles, they had three great wins, wanted to keep that momentum going. The Dogs probably needed the bye more than any other finalist. They got it, and it paid dividends for them.
You know who's telling the whole world how good the bye is at the moment?
Who's that, Jules?
The AFL. Oh. They love it. They love it. The numbers were massive on the weekend at the grounds, on the TV. The footy was intense because teams were rested. I can't see it changing. I think it'll be back next year.
I love it. I've changed my mind.
And if they bring the Brownlow into that week, whether it's the Thursday or the Sunday night, I think that would be fantastic as well. It gives it its own space. It's not, I mean, it's obviously massive in grand final week, but, you know, the players generally can't hang around. They can't do the media. A lot of them aren't there. I think it would be a great result to make the week off even better. But Adam Baldwin, the Players Association, might not agree.
Yeah, the ball man really needs to lift his game down there at Albert Park. Just on the Eagles as well, they kicked 54 points for the night. That's after kicking 100 or more in the previous 4 weeks leading up to that game. It almost felt like same old story to a certain extent, because there were some you know, great players. Gaff, again, continued his really consistent season. But there were a lot of Eagles who seemed to get stage fright. None more so than Jack Darling, who I think having nightmares about that grand final effort again. But Jamie Cripps, Josh Hill, Elliot Yeo again, very quiet. Wellingham was quiet. Lacroix had 17, but went at 46% efficiency. So same old story for the Eagles here, Riles.
Yeah, and it's been the problems that have plagued them all year. I mean, there's been too many passengers at too many stages, I think. And we saw that on Thursday night. Jack Darling wouldn't want to relive that too many times. But it's hard to watch that Jack Darling incident. But in the same sense, it's a split second decision. I mean, you can't berate him. How long can you berate him for it before?
Like,
I mean,
it won't last too long. Yeah. People forget pretty quick.
I don't think they have. I'm still getting people speaking about
it. But people, it's just because it doesn't happen in footy anymore. So if it happens, it's highlighted. Have we seen the gradual decline of Martin Lecrae as well? I just feel like he's not the same player this for the whole season, not just on his performance on the week. Yeah, and his set shot kicking is terrible.
Yeah, up and down year. I was really disappointed with Elliot Yeo as well. He's got so much potential.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And when he goes missing, he really goes missing. I mean, he doesn't have a 6-7 out of 10 game. He's either very good or very bad, and that's a worry for the Eagles.
And we love Josh Kennedy, but his finals record isn't great. He hasn't really taken a final by the scruff of the neck yet.
The Dogs played him really well. There wasn't necessarily one player that played on him throughout the night. They rotated it quite nice between Wood, Morris, and Joel Hamlin did a really good job. Just let's move to the Saturday night game before we get into some trade talk. The burning question from this game, and a great win by the Crows, but of the four North retirees, who haven't we seen the last of Ferrito, Del Santo, Petrie, and of course, Boomer Harvey Jules?
I think Del Santo. I think I've changed my tune on Boomer. I don't think he will play.
Okay.
I think when the dust settles, he's got so much time. He's now a delisted free agent. He's got months to think about this. But I just think he might think, yeah, for 1 year, it's probably not worth it. But I think Del Santo will end up somewhere.
Yeah, I agree. I'm starting to question Boomer. I still think he's genuinely 50-50. It's whether or not he thinks he has 1 year or 2 years left in him. But he's got such drive, and we see the way he attacks pre-season that maybe he wants to go around again. Interesting links to West Coast for Drew Petrie as well over the weekend. I found
that
very strange.
Have they not been watching Drew the last 8 weeks?
Yeah, found that strange. And I'm not even sure if he's the player they need at the moment.
No, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, so it's a weird one. But yeah, I agree. Nick Del Santo, I think he's still got maybe 1 year left in him. And if he can find a club, good on him.
So where does North go from here in terms of list strategy? Or do we already know where they're going because of that bold decision that they made just before round 23 to get rid of those four players? Is this a from the bottom ground up kind of list strategy, do we think, Jules?
I think the three players that's going to be really interesting now is Wells, Waite.
Yeah.
Do you keep Waite?
That's the interesting one. I don't think if you played on the weekend, you do. But
I don't think you do. And Swallow. Do you listen to an offer for Swallow? Do you really be bold and get some picks in and just go for it now?
Well, there's talk about, you know, getting Andrew Swallow up to Gold Coast to keep David Swallow at the Gold Coast.
And provide a bit of leadership for the Suns. And his form has been not glossed over, but we haven't focused on it because of these other four. Mm. But he's struggling.
Yeah, definitely. That's throughout the year as well.
Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting to see what they do. I mean, Ray goes, Nahas will go.
Yep.
So there's going to be a lot of changes.
List turnover.
It's massive in a lot of games, but I think that's what they need to do.
The Crows won't have a lot of list turnover because they've got a great squad together. And in the end, this is the only final that I think really went to plan in the end. The Crows won, got the game on their own terms, won time and forward half by plus 20%. As we mentioned, that inside 50 differential earlier on, and they thrashed the Roos at scores from turnovers, kicked an extra six goals from turnovers there. A super team effort. There was basically, I think I gave one person in the player ratings for foxfooty.com.au 4 out of 10, and I think it was Jenkins, who I think was well beaten, even though he kicked two goals, though. But it was just a super team effort.
It was, and as Don Pike said, he fully expected this group to bounce back. That's what they do, and they're here to make an impact in this final series. And as we sort of talked about on Thursday, it was a real mismatch. On paper, but Eddie Betts.
How good was he?
I remember in 93, you guys might not, but Tony Modra was so big in Adelaide. He was massive. Eddie's nearly as big.
Yeah.
He is scintillating. Every time he goes near the ball, you expect something to happen, and most times he delivers that mark where he was on the ground, he got up. It was unbelievable. What a player he is.
You say the fans expect, I think opposition defenders expect as well. I think there's almost perceived pressure is
like
greater. The perceived pressure is greater than the actual pressure. You think when the ball's in his vicinity, the defenders almost start thinking, oh, geez, here we go again. So he was great. And how good was Brody Smith as well, half-back?
He hasn't had a great year, I don't think, but that was a great game.
And everyone talks about whether or not if they had Rory Sloan in round 23, whether or not they would have finished top two and got that home qualifying final. If they had Brody Smith as well, I think I definitely would have.
Had 927 metres gained on that's his game down to a T. So well done to Brody Smith there. Just quickly before we talk about trades, Kyle Hardigan, is he in trouble for that trip, you reckon, Jules?
When was the last time a player got suspended for a trip?
Yeah, can't remember.
Dustin Fletcher. About 13 times.
Yeah, that's right. I think you'll be fine. I think you'll get a fine.
Yeah, okay. All right, what about the player movement talk? The burning question, I suppose, we'll run through a couple of players and a couple of clubs, but has Hawthorn overtaken the Dons as the favourite now for Jager O'Meara Riles? Of course, he's been linked with a lot of clubs, Jager, particularly St Kilda and Carlton, in particular the Dons. I suppose in the immediate aftermath of telling Gold Coast that he wanted out, the Dons sort of loomed as the favourites. But a Hawthorn just riding this race?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think because of the fact that Gold Coast want experienced players and players that they can put straight into their senior team, I think Hawthorn might have more to offer in that respect, especially given the state of their list. And if they don't win the flag this year, whether or not they want to start that regeneration of their list. So I think they will. Obviously, Essendon has the preseason draft, but how many times has that threatened to happen? It never actually comes true. So, yeah, I think Hawthorn are still the favourites in that respect.
I felt the whole way through he's going to end up at Hawthorn. So I think that's where he will.
Can they fit Tom Mitchell and Jager O'Meara in there? I'm pretty certain that Mitchell will probably be heading to Hawthorn. Yep. Can they fit them both?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep. They can.
Nice little midfield
and
there.
And probably Tyrone as well.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, big Tyrone just fitting in that forward line very nicely alongside Jack Fitzpatrick.
Tell you what, Showmakers was good the other night.
Yeah, he came very in and good. Did okay. He did his role. A couple of other players just wanted to mention. Just a bit of talk about Travis Cloak and how the Pies might not make it very easy to get out, if at all. I think it's more a threat than anything else that he'll have to see out his contract and not play role. Surely this won't come to fruition and he'll get his wish to go somewhere.
Yeah, I think the Pies will budge on that one. It wouldn't surprise me if they wanted him out just as much as he wants out, in the sense that just to get a fresh start for both. So I think they'll help out in the end. I think he'll be on his way to the Dogs.
Watching the Dogs the other night.
Do they need him?
No, I don't think
they do. I think they do. They need a key forward.
They've got Cramery back next year. No, Tom Boyd is growing.
Tom Boyd had a good game on Thursday night.
So I don't know if Cloak and Boyd I don't know.
Never goes as
can he get up the ground and be that centre half forward? That's the question.
I think if he does go to the Dogs, someone at the Dogs just needs to let him know you might not be in the best side every week.
But that's the risk you take.
That's what Cloak wants. He wants to be in the best side every week because he believes he can still offer. And at his best, he can still offer. What about Nathan Buckley confirming interest in Ivan?
Is that like the Ben Hudson role? Like, he's going to be playing assistant coach and a backup for the seniors if they need him.
Well, especially because I'm expecting Jared Witts to leave as well. So it wouldn't be the worst deal in the world. But my question is, where do you think Collingwood's think their own list is at, in the sense that they're going after Wells, Del Santo, sent a few links to Brent Harvey, and now they've got Marich on their cards as well. I mean, where do they see their list?
Well, they booked their B&F for after the granny this year, so obviously they think it was pretty good. So I want to be careful there because they're not that close.
I can understand maybe Wells and Del
Get
Santo.
Wells. Wells is the player they
you
need.
You put them a half back, and they're lacking kickers on
that's
half
right.
Back.
So
if you flag a role for Wells or Del Santo off half back and just purely playing behind the footy, it makes sense. But
Big Ivan's a strange one for mine.
I tweeted that out, my thoughts that we flagged here on the Thursday podcast about Del Santo to Collingwood. And a lot of Collingwood fans thinking, I just need to get some fit players. We need Charenberg's a great kick. Once he's right, he's good to go. Jackson Ramsey, get him back. Someone said Tom Langdon, but he's not a great kick. They need some experience, I think, back there to help them with their disposal efficiency. I think he would work quite well.
Yeah, I think Dell at Collingwood's a good fit.
And one final one, Joe Watson. Obviously, touched back down in the country on last week, and he got the paparazzi treatment from Herald Sun photographers. I think as probably as all expected.
He would love that.
He's the only one left, Job. What's your hunch?
He'll stay. It's like, Job, I'm feeling he's made his decision, so just come out and so you don't have cameras in your face.
You surprised it wasn't made at the Best and Fairest?
I think that's what they were hoping, but he has said he hadn't made his decision. He wants to sit down with family and all those sort of things and John Worsfold, but he's trained under John Worsfold for 4 months. So, look, I think by the end of the week, we'll find out that he will be an Essendon player for at least next year.
I think he will stay as well, but I wonder why he hasn't actually said yes so far. I mean, you've had 12 months to make your decision. I think you would have made it by now.
Yeah, correct.
And that's my lingering doubt, but I do think he'll stay.
Hamish Hartlett, please. No.
No?
No, Adrian. No.
So he's been linked with Essendon, Gold Coast as well.
I don't think it's, not for Essendon.
No.
For any club? I mean, maybe Gold Coast if they want an experienced midfielder, but, I mean, he didn't prove himself to be what's he on, 700K?
Well, how much of that salary does Port play if he goes somewhere else?
Yeah, I know. I don't think he proved himself to be a real A-grade midfielder this season, so I'm not sure.
No. 12 months ago, Riles, we were reporting that Hartlett was going to stay and sign a 5-year deal, and 12 months later, he's going to another club.
It's his decision in the end as well. Like, if Port Adelaide don't agree to pay some of that money if he does move, and if he doesn't get what he's on, he can just stay. He's got bloody 4 years left in his contract. Why wouldn't you?
Well, there's some big long-term deals for you boys after your podcast performance because you're not going anywhere. Very nice work from you boys as we look back at week one of the final series. We'll be back later in the week, obviously, to look ahead at the two big games, the Hawks and the Dogs and the Swans and the Crows and the Fox Footy podcast bunker. Make sure you check out Jules' work on Fox Sports News and especially AFL Tonight right throughout the week and read Ryle's work at foxfooty.com.au. And remember to follow us on Twitter @FoxFootyLive.